Okay. Is that better? Okay. This is code of our own, supporting women developers in open source, and that means us. So I want to talk not actually about code. Sorry if that was deceptive. I want to talk about actually feminism, advanced feminist solidarity theory, and make kind of an action plan. So beyond just going, gosh, where are all the women? Why don't we have any women in open source? I don't know. We've asked that enough times that you can Google it. you can Google it and find a lot of answers and a lot of argument. We're here already. We don't want to ask where are we when we're here. We're not invisible. We've made actually good progress, but there's a lot of work still to be done, and we don't really have a great roadmap for what that work is or how to do it. One thing I want to know is how can we better support each other? And that includes me. I want better support. I'm supporting a lot of people, and I'm doing a lot of educating, but I actually need help too. So I'm going to talk about that as well as what I'm doing actively. And one of the things I think we need for better support is more of us. So this does include, how do we bring new women into open source developer communities and keep them there? My graphic here is from Scud's talk at OSCON this year, which you can find at Infotrope. And it's a photo of a lot of the DreamWith and Open OT, Organization for Transformative Works developers. So I want to hand wave through a lot of assumptions because this is the advanced feminist theory solidarity class. We're assuming diversity is good for open source software and that we love open source software, yay, that it's good for women in the world in general. And I want to actually assume a big concept that you may not have thought about, but that universal design is a great goal and is a goal, one of the sub-goals of open source software and culture. And that goal is reached best by widening the pool of contributors and increasing diversity. And so going along with that, having more women contributing to free open source software is a good thing. So hand wave through that. And now I want to talk about, I'm going to jump a little bit back. I'm just going to sort of spiral around here and jump around ideas. Let's talk about negativity and what not to do. I think a great example of this is a book that is popular in the science fiction feminist community, How to Suppress Women's Writing by Joanna Russ, who is a science fiction writer and a feminist theory writer. So she's talking about women writing literature, but actually a lot of what she said applies to women writing code. So I'm thinking of us as developers, as writers, and all of the same techniques she outlines in something I think is very important for us to do, which is naming the problem. We often get, you know, criticized for being critical and for complaining or whining or pointing out problems, but we actually need to do that to name some, to be able to quickly recognize and categorize and then fight or circumvent various problems. She makes a very, very good list in a very short book. Maybe it's less than 100 pages. The first thing she points out is denial of agency as a rhetorical strategy to trivialize what women's contributions to writing are. Denial of agency meaning you didn't really write it. Pollution of agency is meaning you kind of had help writing it. Double standard of content meaning you wrote it, but actually you know, somebody else wrote something different, and we think theirs is great and yours isn't because you're female. False categorizing, which is saying what you did isn't really literature, isn't really art, isn't really programming. Isolation would be isolation and anomalousness kind of go together, but isolation would be you do it, but you have to do it all by yourself, incredibly lonely, in your attic, as a mad woman, a mad programmer. Anomalousness is a rhetorical strategy of saying you're like the only one. There have never been any female programmers until now, yay! And strangely, you can look back in time, and people always say that. So the crest of that wave just keeps moving forward in time. And 10 years from now, somebody else is going to be saying, oh, isn't it great that right now is the moment when women are finally coming? You know, we don't want that to happen, but I'm afraid that it does. So now I'm going to jump out of that negativity and talk about my actual situation. I work for Blogher, which is a women's media company that focuses on helping women who blog. And it's a lot of different things. It has an annual conference, a couple of annual conferences, pretty big conference, over 1,000 people. I think it's up to 1,800 people now, mostly women. A big group blog site. It's kind of like a magazine. 80 paid editors, all women. They all use Drupal, so I'm intimately familiar with Drupal and with telling people how to use Drupal. and hearing their critiques of it. We also have an ad network for 2,500 bloggers, so we serve ads to this network of bloggers. 2,400 of them are women. So right here, I have this pool of people of women who are using open source software. They're using Drupal, they're using WordPress quite a lot of the time, and almost none of them are developers or are programmers or are contributing to open source. Probably less than five, I could probably think of them. So I've got these 2,400 women, and I do back-end development. I'm one of two developers for Blogger, but I also do all the sort of codey tech support. So anytime someone's blog breaks or they're doing something and screw up their template or lose their database, I get called in and help them. So I can now support like every blog platform. So there are 900 of them on self-hosted WordPress. And it tends to be a situation where they either had someone who's a friend or a boyfriend or a husband walk them through it or do it for them, or they've hired someone who's a contractor. And that's usually the pathway. So, and then I have very few people who have walked through doing it themselves. But once they've got it, they're kind of stuck with it. It's there. And they're using the software very heavily. It's not just like they downloaded it, tried it, and went away again. They're stuck. I mean, their soul, heart and soul, their writing daily is on this platform. So my theory was that, ha, I've got this. These women, I can kind of use them as my experiment. in theory, a good pathway to becoming a contributor might be touching and owning your code, first of all. Look at your code. You do something with it. You just like with the early days of HTML development, a lot of women came in, right? That's how I got in. Even though I was a programmer before that, I didn't have a job being a programmer until web development started kicking off. So just touching your code and realizing you have some power over it. Then I think one traditional pathway is like you start editing the documentation, as Angela suggested, maybe building themes, building plugins, and very few people are going to maybe contribute to the core of something like WordPress or Drupal. But that's sort of the roadmap that I see possible. So I set out to think, how would I long-term try to affect that? Here's this, yes, I already said this. It's kind of just my theory. Hey, here's this pool of very smart, dedicated software users. They're passionate users, not really part of the WordPress community. And I say that because one way I know they're not really part of the WordPress community is not just that they're not contributing, but when we had people before 2.8.4 in WordPress were getting hacked kind of catastrophically. And so I had to go around and tell everyone about this and get them to upgrade. And so I realized they don't even know, you know, that they're not even hooked in to updates about the software they're using. So I've been trying in our conferences and in just daily tech support, trying to change that situation and just shift that culture just a little bit. I've been running workshops and tutorials at Geek Lab, at the She's Geeky conference, at Blogalicious. They're very interested in expanding. Blogalicious is women of color who blog. The next one's happening in Miami. It's a great conference. It's incredible. But I do find that it's work in progress and it's taking years. And, you know, what Angela said about it being 0.05% of people who ever contribute, I think that's realistic. And yet I still think working on expanding the pool and expanding and empowering women specifically who are users of the software is going to help us. So what are we doing? And what works and doesn't work? I'm going to be a little critical here. Mentoring programs. Yay, mentoring. If you can teach and mentor someone, or if you have someone who's a great mentor, good. But I think that these programs suck. I see it again and again. Women need some help in software, so let's start a mentor program where we'll match you up with the newbie and the expert. Well, you never get enough experts, is what I find. Nobody wants to say they're a newbie, because they don't want to say they're completely ignorant, and nobody wants to say they're an expert, because they don't want people sucking away all their time by asking them questions when they should be Googling. But also, declaring you're an expert makes you, as a woman, there's a particular gender dynamic where you become, more than men, I think, you become under fire, you become a target, you become a target of scrutiny, not necessarily a target of like someone shooting you, but a target of extra scrutiny. Does your code suck? Then it says something about all women. It's like every time I play chess, I'm like fucking playing chess for the honor of women everywhere. It sucks. Anyway, like if I lose, you know, no. So that's a lot of pressure, and I think a lot of us feel that pressure. I don't think it's just me. So those are a lot of the critiques I have of mentoring program. Another barrier I find is that people are coming in without the old school skills that they need. you can be a web developer and never touch the command line, and you can be an effective web developer, but I think that that's a barrier to being a Floss contributor because we're not set up, not a lot of projects are set up to handle that. So either we need to be teaching people command line skills and doing that with each other, or change the path of the way that Floss contributions happen. And I think it's a cultural thing, too. Like, all I have to do at the beginning of a talk to a mainstream audience, technical audience, is make some kind of Unix joke. And then everyone goes, the room just kind of sighs and relaxes, like, oh, good, she's old school. Yeah, that's dumb, you know, just because I know three Unix commands, so what? So my other criticism, this is maybe a little controversial, and I don't want to harsh anyone's mellow, and it's great to teach your kids programming and to go volunteer to teach girls how to use programming. But I have to say, I always find it very annoying. So we talk about the leaky pipeline. Everyone goes, oh my god, no women in open source. What do we do? Oh, let's go teach some little girls how to program. Great. So preserve your power relationship. You're some guy. You're some like hackery guy. You're an open source guy. And you're idealistic. And you want to help women. You know what? Talk to some grown-ups. So that's my criticism of that. It's like... it's very great to teach programming to girls. My dad taught me to program when I was a kid. It didn't fucking help me when I got tits. So think about that. Thanks, Dad. You know, but it's not going to solve. You're not going to fix all of sexism and patriarchy by being nice to your own daughter and her friends. It's a great thing to do, and it does change the world, but it's not going to necessarily give them the real-world infrastructure they need for the rest of their lives and their career. So we have to think broader than that. Your boyfriend is awesome. You know, you're not all heterosexual, you know, but my boyfriend is awesome. Here's my boyfriend. You hack together. Awesome. You're pair programmers. Yay, it's the best thing ever. But it's also not going to help you in the long run in many ways. It makes you vulnerable to that. Remember the slide about Joanna Russ and ways to suppress women's writing. Pollution of agency often depends on your sexual relationship. So any time you're only hacking with your boyfriend, years from now someone will just go, oh, well, he probably wrote all her code. That's never going to happen to him. Nobody's ever going to go, she probably wrote all his really best stuff. So, you know, do your hacking, love your partner, but don't let your real life fail the Bechdel test. The Bechdel test, if you don't know, is the author of Dykes to Watch Out For, Alison Bechdel, had her characters invented this, and it's a test for movies to say, are there more than two women, or is there more than one woman in it? Do they talk to each other about something that's not a man? So, you know, I think in our lives, part of my advice for advanced feminist solidarity theory is to talk to more than one, you know, person, talk to other women about code and do work together, because I think that will actually make a huge difference. So we need strategies to fight imposter syndrome. Clay Shirky, I'm talking to you. I don't know if you read his rant about women, but he wrote it the other day and my head exploded, basically blaming women for not being confident enough. And I've heard that a lot. Like, oh, there's a problem, not enough women programmers and not enough women in open source. The problem is the women need to go become more confident. That doesn't happen by some kind of shiny magic. I can't just decide to be more confident. I already am incredibly confident and arrogant compared to everybody I know. But I'm still in deep shit a lot of the time. And I think, you know, and I'm a decent programmer. I try not to put myself down. But whatever I know, it never seems to be enough. I think of what I felt 10 years ago, and I didn't feel like I was good enough. I didn't know enough. I didn't know enough programming. I wasn't a real programmer, even though I had a job as a software engineer. And I still feel that way a lot of the times. I'm not really a hacker. I'm not, like, creating some great thing. You know, I don't have enough commits to things. I haven't done enough out in public. So I have a lot of that, and I think that a lot of us do, no matter how kick-ass. And I think every coder knows someone more geekier and a better, everyone knows a better programmer, you know what I mean? So everybody has some of those feelings, but it has a particular effect when you throw gender dynamics into that mix. So people also advise us a lot to man up, act more like men, boast more, be more confident, you know, don't put ourselves down, be tough. But I think that there are ways that we specifically can both not have to do that and do it a little bit when we need to. So one way is to think of tech support and debugging as feminist activism. When you are helping someone, help them really well and help them in a way that it doesn't make them feel stupider. Don't put yourself in the expert position I mean, A, it's a lot of pressure and puts you under fire. But you don't have to be the expert. You can sit there and figure stuff out in front of them. You know, and for Blogger, for my job, when people write to me, when those 2,400 women I'm writing about, every single email, including from my coworkers, I hope this is getting recorded, isn't it? Everyone writes to me and says, I'm having a tech problem. I am so stupid. Like, that's instantly where their mind goes. And it's both an insecurity problem and a strategy that actually works for women. Whether you're talking to a woman or a man, if you put yourself down a little bit, they'll help you more. They'll help you nicer. It's the way that we're taught to sort of socialize and to work things. And it means that you're not arrogating. You're not going, I'm so awesome, you have to help me. You're saying, I'm just like you. The correct response to I'm so stupid is, oh, I'm so stupid too, don't worry. And I don't want to do that because I refuse to go around saying how stupid I am because it's not true. But so I get in trouble as a woman, as I think many of us in the room may, for not doing that all the time and not self-deprecating. At one of the house parties that I helped organize called Wolf Camp, named after Virginia Woolf, as this talk is, Code of Our Own is named after a room of one's own. At Wolf Camp, we had sort of a little unconference, just a house party of 30 people, 35 people, something like that. We went around the room and talked about moments when we had put ourselves down and why we feel the impulse to put ourselves down. We sort of processed it. We let it all hang out. We did a little consciousness raising. And then we agreed this whole weekend at this house party where we're going to talk computers, we're going to not put ourselves down. And anytime someone does, we're just going to point at them and go, disclaimer, and you know, lovingly remind each other to not do that. But when I find myself putting myself down, I then go into a negative spiral where I can be like, oh no, I'm doing that thing again. And you can beat yourself up for doing it. And I have to be very careful about that with the women that I support, that I do tech support for and whose code I'm fixing, because I might gently say, you know, you're putting yourself down, you're not really stupid, you actually know more than I do, I'm just helping you fix a bug that you couldn't fix. This happens to people that are really amazing. And then they beat themselves up more for having done it. And that's just really sad. So I'd like to try to have us all work to have that not happen. I want to create a culture in open source of figuring things out together rather than one of experts and beginners and newbies or people who, you know, people who are mentors and people who are their students and who are perpetually in this power relationship. So I think peer mentoring is the way to go. Finding people to hack with, I think, is crucial to that. The unconference I mentioned was great, and it was just a bunch of people coming to somebody's house. It wasn't hard to organize, didn't cost any money. We did a potluck, we disco danced, we painted our nails. It was great. Tech camps are good. Go to the free or local unconferences you can, or just organize them. The thing I do find is that starting from the beginning, that what you think may be the beginning may not be beginning enough. Like, you may be losing people. I find that I try to invite all these bloggers I'm talking about to come to Code Chicks, come to Super Happy Dev House, yay. I can't get them to come because they think that they're not hackery enough to come to Super Happy Dev House, no matter how I try to persuade them that, yes, tinkering with your theme on your blog is actually fine, let's just do that. It's very hard to get people to come to Introduction to Python if they've never looked at a command line and aren't even sure if their computer has Python on it. My sub note here, this is like a cheating, you know, another Baroque spiral into another digression, but I wrote a long time ago in the Riot Girl movement, yesteryear, I wrote a zine called How to Start a Band, which I didn't know anything about, but I went around interviewing people and asking them, how did you start your band? How did you learn how to be a musician? And what I found was that boys started playing when they were in middle school. They would just screw around with instruments and they were incredibly incompetent, and then by the time they were 16 or 17, they were kind of good at it already. Meanwhile, the girls were like under a lot of social pressure to be mature, to be competent, to always appear like they had their shit together, and to be interested in the boys, and to make fun of the boys a little for being kind of dorks. But so because they weren't socially being dorks together, they didn't evolve those skills to be comfortable looking stupid together or not knowing something together. And that may seem to contradict what I said earlier about not calling ourselves stupid. But what I mean is we can actually work on these skills now. We don't have to just intervene with 11-year-old, 12-year-old girls now. We as adults, it's not like, oh, it's too late for you, sorry. We're just going to start over with a new crop of tabula rasa little girls, you bitter old hags. So No, we can actually work on these skills ourselves and learn to be in that place of uncertainty and learning with respect for each other. And that's my utopian ideal. In these events I'm talking about, a really crucial element for women to feel comfortable in this context, being vulnerable like that and learning, introductions are very important. So I've really admired the way that She's Geeky has done that. Kalia Hamilton has done a really good job with it in every conference I've seen her run, or open space, I forget which is which. Introductions, just talking about our lives a little bit, develop some trust. And there's some facilitation involved there so that you keep things moving along and people don't talk about themselves forever. Tagging yourself is kind of useful, like write five things you know, or write something you know and something you want to learn up on a big piece of paper, something like that. That's all very useful. Putting up photos of yourselves, like having some kind of reference material, reference point for who everybody is I think very helpful for anything where you're going to delve into. I would love it for right now. Like, it would be great. We could easily, I'm not criticizing this conference because it's awesome, but we could have something up on the wall. We could have our chairs in a circle. Let's go all the way with it. So starting from the very beginning, I want to just give a shout out to DreamWidth for doing that incredibly well. DreamWidth is like a live journal fork. The co-founders of it, Mark Smith and Denise Pellucci, are actually here and going to be speaking later in the week. They do a very good job of taking a lot of non-programmers and teaching them how to do it and having a very clear pathway in. What do you need to start coding? So that's actually a good topic for people to talk about together. What tools do you use? And do a real show and tell. I've run that a couple of times now at unconferences and at the Geek Lab at Blogger, and it goes very well. So a lot of us just saying, here's the kind of programming I do, or the kind of web dev I do, and here's all the tools I use, and just throwing up a giant list and then maybe showing around the room, you know, how do I actually do my workflow? How do I actually do my coding and checking in and all of that kind of stuff? It's incredibly informative, and it made me feel really a lot more comfortable that I know a lot, because I found that I'm often feeling that I don't know what other people know, but they don't know what I know either, so it evens out. Installing things, little install-a-thons, are very effective and I think help people feel comfortable. Like installing WordPress on a web host, get a web host, you know, downloading software. Those are all kind of starting before the beginning. That's kind of what I mean when I say start earlier than what you might think of as the beginning. Like even just having server space. You can't assume that we have server space. We don't have the server of our own. Another good one, installing Drupal on your Mac with MAMP. That was a very good hour or hour and a half tutorial. I'm sure you guys can think of infinite ones. Looking at code together, remarkably effective, like a code tour. We had a great one run by Nelly Yusupova at the Geek Lab that was just a tour of index.php and WordPress. And this was people who are not programmers who think of code when they think programming or the code that runs my stuff. They just think of this like assembly language barf type situation where there's like, you know, stuff scrolling past like in the Matrix. And when they actually sat down to look at it and we looked at it together and we talked about it and marked it out, this is probably something people have covered many times in sort of how to teach programming to non-programmers. But it was very helpful to do in a group with other women. And it was the biggest epiphany I saw people have was when you look at the code, you don't just instantly know what it says and does. You have to actually dig around and look at other files and figure stuff out. Admitting to each other that debugging is hard. This slide, like I had more feedback from this slide at Geek Lab than any other talk I've given. People were very comforted just that looking at code was kind of hard and, you know, ways to wrangle it. And so I suggested ways to wrangle it, print it out, use a highlighter, write all over it, you know, block it out in different blocks and write marginal notes that say what it does so that you have some way to wrap your head around it. And then I explained Pastebin, which has been kind of revolutionary in our world now, because people can share code with each other. Introductions to language are great. This was a Ruby workshop. Having server space is crucial. I found this out when I tried to give a stupid command line tricks talk and everyone had Windows. I was like, ah. So to quickly set up guest accounts for people, and the talk ended up being like 15 minutes long. House parties, I already mentioned Wolf Camp. It was very good. I've heard people having very good success with house parties. Being mostly women, we weren't super separatist about it, but I think that you have to make a special effort to focus everything on women and to make things informal and fun. We actually had to practice and be very explicit about telling the guys to shut up a little bit, because they wanted to tell us how to do it. They were like, well, I'm going to teach you how to be a great programmer. And we were just like, shut up. So, you know, well, we weren't like, just shut up, because we had to, you know, be nice. But we did a lot of practicing of like, that's very interesting, Dave Weiner, but if you could just, no. We did a lot of like, that's very interesting, but if you could actually just listen, because I think we need to focus on what so-and-so has to say and listen to each other. So we did a lot of that very sort of gentle hand-holding, shut up-iness. Very good to role play it out and practice it. One-on-one teaching was great. Doing workshops that were just pairing people up and having you show somebody something on their own computer, that's crucial. Looking over someone's shoulder to see how they work is great. Let's see, this is just meetups and hack days. I'm just mentioning ones that I know about in the Bay Area, hacker spaces. But again, just your house can function. So are these things working? This returning back to my original, you know, mad scientist goal of experimenting on my own community during my job, I don't know. I don't see any like giant dramatic result, but I do think that people feel that their code and their open source code itself has been kind of demystified. They do get the concept. They can look at the code now, and that it's there. And I think it has shifted power to some degree. That people feel the possibility of control has been useful. So, how much time do I have, by the way? Oh, heaps of time. Okay, good.
Well, you can actually go until 3:15 if you want to.
Oh, well, I don't want to cut into anyone's tea. So, so does it work? I don't know. I have the feeling it does. It's not like I'm gathering any data and I'm not a social scientist. But my feeling is that people are a little more empowered and are more likely to start jumping in. And when I see projects like DreamWith, I think that that's very concurrent. I think a lot of people are doing the kind of things that I'm doing, and a lot of us have been operating this way, especially when I'm talking about the sort of tech support level. Like, you probably all have a sort of, you know, bunch of people you have to support, like your family or your in-laws or your friend so-and-so, right? Like, I have a bunch of people that I have to support, and so I see that as like an opportunity. It's very annoying at the holidays, but take that and run with it and try to get people to pass it on and teach somebody else the thing that you've just taught them. So I want to jump back now to me and my own experience, because as I started out with saying, this is actually all about us. I'm here, I'm one of us, I'm an open source developer. I find it hard too. In the communities I've been describing, I'm like the awesome, inconceivable guru of code. Now, I don't actually see myself that way. And in the sort of technical conference or like coming here, I'm not going to be a Linux kernel hacker ever, and I don't want to be. But, you know, I'm running with people who are so much more skilled than me that it's hard not to feel a discrepancy or a gulf or feel a little bit like, you know, newbie-ish all the time. However, you know, and I've also been a programmer like my whole life since like taking a punch card class and fooling around in BASIC and that kind of thing. I came in through tech writing and web dev and that kind of thing, and just going, well, I can make a website, hell. Got better and better jobs that way and started to do more and more actual development, but also never quite felt like a super studly Perl hacker or anything like that. And I never actually feel, it's just confessional, but you know, I never actually feel experienced enough, you know. And I recognize that I'm never actually going to be experienced enough for some people. Like, there's no way I can prove myself well enough. I also don't really want to be a super hacker. I really enjoy learning a little bit of every new language and fooling around with it and going, oh, well, I have to write a bunch of scripts. Maybe I'll write them in this new thing, and I want to try Django. But then I don't actually go on to become a Django expert. And I think that's okay, and I think more of us actually have to say that. And as women, as a woman, I feel some pressure to just dive deeply into something and prove something. Prove it. Prove I can be super studly at something. And I actually want to fight that and not do it because I don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy being a dilettante. So back to what helps us and specifically what I think would help me. IAM and Pastebin are awesome. People are always like, go on IRC and ask your question. This never has good results for me unless I go on Drupal Chicks and ask Angie. But, you know, this never has good results for me. You know, I get trolled, harassed, ignored. Just, I feel shitty, you know, I don't want to go into some channel like my professional area and confess that I don't know something, because what if it's something so obvious that everyone's going to think I'm really dumb and never hire me? You know, that's a lot of vulnerability. I don't really want to do that. So I tend to really like to find people to privately. I think it's okay to not have to put everything out in public, although that's a sub-goal, which we'll go there in a second. So IRC can be uncomfortable. I don't think we necessarily have to man up and put our shit out on IRC. We can have people to debug with, and that would be great. Looking over people's shoulders as they work, I love this. I love this as much as I love pair programming, because I just, you know, you watch their process, you watch the tools they use, you learn something every time, you learn some new little VI command or something, little tricks of efficiency. You can steal their MRC file, yay. But also the screw-ups. So I really enjoy the schadenfreude of having somebody awesome and studly and hackery go, oh, I'll do that for you, it'll just be 10 minutes. And then like 6 hours later, I'm like, ha. So it was easy, huh? You know, I did tell you that I worked on it for 2 days. That actually is very comforting and good and pumps me up to see somebody flail around and run into the same difficulties I did. And I think we don't actually get enough of that as women, because there's pressure on us to either do it right or don't do it at all. You know everything or don't even try. So showing our code, even though I just said I'm always scared to show my code, I've been trying to do that a little bit on various blogs. So I'll just be like, oh, I just did a nifty thing in awk. I'll just blog about it. It's totally trivial. Everybody already knows this. And plus, I probably did something stupid. But I'm just trying to blog it a little bit, little by little anyway. And it's never had any super negative results for me. But I look at Leah Culver. Like, I thought of Leah Culver as like, yay, Python programmer. You've got your own company. Oh, my God, awesome. At least somebody's doing it, even if I'm not going to do it. You know, it was very nice to know. But then she got shouted down. So she posted some question on her blog about how to do something. I forgot even what it was, something with random numbers. And everybody just went, you dumbass. That was so unfair. Like, everybody, you know, you can know quite a lot of things and not have, like, a super thorough computer science background in everything. So, but that was awful. And it was sexist. It was horrible. It was misogynist in every way. And then, you know, that just really discouraged. I have to say that had a huge chilling effect on my wanting to post my own code, because I was like, if I make a mistake, everybody's going to jump on my ass. Meanwhile, every little kid, you know, teenage boy posts their Linux question on some forum, you know, and they might get called dumb, but it doesn't seem to stop them, and I wonder about that, and I want to change that. Things that might work. My main point of this whole talk is code more with other women. This is the sort of Bechdel test of our lives, right? Code, actually talk to other women about code and actually work together. I want to do more of that. I don't do it enough. Posting your code is one possible way for that. Host a figuring out our code together or show our projects meetup for women. Maybe just do that with the people you know. Give a talk on exactly what to do to become involved in a specific open source project. So I want to do that more with DreamWidth, because I think they have a great introductory path. Bring women into IRC channels, and I think having all of the women in X, you know, PHP women, et cetera, Linux chicks, that's great, that's helpful. But we need to push that further and actually code together more. So I would like to encourage us all to do that. To do that, we have to shift our attention patterns, make time to hang out with other women while actually doing geek stuff, pay attention to other women's information feeds, read their blogs, control your information feed so that you really diversify it. You have to actually make an effort to do this. For many reasons, it's difficult. It can be difficult because you don't feel like people are writing about the specific thing you want. Is that a 1 minute? Oh, yes, go ahead.
Okay, there's like a few in here.
Yeah.
And, okay, we're all from different countries. Yes. I live in a small town in the South Island. I think I'm the only woman there who's geeky. I would love to hang out with other women and do geeky things, but they're just not. Where do I find them?
Go for
it. Please. I actually helped with that.
It's easy. Girl Geek Dinners. Look at girlgeekdinners.com. Find the one in your local area. If there's not one, start one. I get 60 people to every dinner in Canberra. I don't care how small your town is. Start one.
All right, I will.
Well, the people I was describing at the Wolf Camp house party that we had... it was a meetup for people who we combined it with something else. So actually my advice to you would be pick an area, another area of your life that you're interested in. Find other people who are knitting or something, and then bring them all online. Bring them into something, you know? I mean, that's kind of an uphill battle. but you may find that people are more technical than they are willing to present themselves as, so they may not realize you're actually talking to them. I don't know. So I've actually found people that I want to talk to and hang out with by giving classes at the library on blogging and things like that. So it can be kind of surprising. But my other, you know, the negative part of this slide that I didn't super go into is that you have to make a special effort to talk to other women because someone is always, guys are always ready to interrupt your conversation with other women. We're interruptible. What we're saying to each other is probably not important. What they have to say is probably more expert. You may have a tendency, or other women around you may have the tendency to pay attention to the loudmouth jackass dude in the room, even if you're secretly thinking, I need to leave and go to the kitchen just so I can have some space to talk about something else amongst ourselves. So I actually think it's more difficult than you might even think to just converse with other women. And I'm not a super separatist, but I'm like a temporary separatist. I think we have to fight to have spaces to nucleate and have conversations that don't happen if we're having them in front of men or with men. So solidarity and sisterhood is my goal. To achieve solidarity and sisterhood, beta read other women's stuff. We can learn something from fandom here, fandom and fanfic writers and fan art people. The concept of exposing your unfinished drafts and things to a small, trusted circle of people who then help you improve it. And that's kind of the idea of open source, except it all happens very much in public. And we know that there can be a lot of negative dynamics associated with that. So for example, just in order to apply to come here and submit a talk, I think, you know, 9 people had to pump up my ego on the Geek Feminism back channel for me to just, like, nerve up to do it. So all of those how to suppress women's writing things that I listed before, denial of agency, oh, she probably didn't actually write it, you know, or she wrote it unconsciously through her natural womanly talent to write documentation because user interfaces, women intuitively understand how to make things easy. No, you know, that's actually denial of agency. That's denying that somebody deliberately worked to have the talent and intelligence to produce something. Pollution of agency, assuming that somebody else wrote it for or with, you know, or had more influence over what somebody wrote or did or achieved. All the other things I listed back on slide 2, try not to do those things to yourself. Try not to discount yourself and load yourself up with disclaimers. Back channels, again, I think they're very important. It's good to have a place to complain. We have to be able to complain because we have to be able to name problems. Feminism 101, naming the problem. We have to be able to identify what is happening and in order to detect patterns so that we don't spend our entire life reinventing the wheel and fighting the same problem over and over again. So complaining is good. Documenting complaints is good because then that becomes public as much as you can. And then once you've done that, turn whatever it is into positive action and figure out stuff to do and strategies to get around it and support other people in that situation so people aren't alone and isolated and pissed off all by themselves. I think that you can avoid burnout and isolation by standing together, and that can be very effective. If you look around at different successful feminist movements or women's movements, you'll see people like the Combahee River Collective, like my own company, Blogher. I find that very effective because anytime the founders of my company win an award or something, it's the three of them together. It's not like Lisa Stone wins an award. It's like Lisa, Jory, and Elisa together. They're like unit thing, one. And that's that's because it makes them not so much of a target. It's harder to discount them. It's harder to say their boyfriend did it all for them because they're several women and they cover a broader spectrum of skill and possibility, and they bolster each other up. So I think that actually it's very useful to avoid burnout because then you're not always the one receiving all the criticism. You can kind of spread that out. I think that's about all I have to say. Does anyone else want to contribute something or have any comment, question?
Okay, just one comment here. Instead of keeping trying to calling yourself stupid, you might as well admit to ignorance. It's a lot easier. Instead of calling yourself stupid all the time, it helps to just say I'm ignorant instead of being I'm stupid.
Well, I don't really think that I'm stupid or ignorant.
The problem when most men hear stupid, yeah, at least as I understand, is it says I'm incapable of learning this.
I don't yet know.
As opposed to saying I don't yet know.
Yes. It's a useful turn of phrase that just shifts how you're thinking about things.
Related to that, instead of describing yourself as wanting to be a dilettante, I prefer to think of myself as a passionate generalist.
Yes. Renaissance woman. Yes.
I found when I started, the only woman visible were really, really good. And so I was this complete beginner, and I was measuring myself from the top down.
Yes.
Not the bottom up, because yes. At that point, we'd had a computer since I was, I think, 11, and there was a lot that I didn't actually know that I knew because I'd forgotten how I learned it. But the only woman that I knew were so much better than me, and what looked like naturally, it was pretty hard for me to actually think that, you know, actually I'm better than a lot of people, and
right.
I can learn.
Right, and we want to aspire you want to have the best models before you, right? You want to aspire as high as you can, I think it's a good thing.
Also, I just wanted to point out that lots of women in here are fantastic with computers, Jo especially. Not that I have a favorite or anything, but but it's not just that we can actually get good at computers and stuff, but there's also like women have to be thin, they still have to look good, and in the workplace where there's all this pressure to still do everything men can do, but do it femininely.
Mm-hmm.
And cut in.
Make it social. Yes, the Geek Girl Bingo is very funny for that. Yeah, Geek Girl Bingo, look it up.
What Jo was saying is absolutely correct, and I think it happens a lot. I think we think it happens a lot as well. When you do start in work, you know, getting into the geek community or whatever, you do tend to look around at all the people around you and you go, oh my God, everyone knows all this stuff and I have got no idea. You know, I'm completely clueless. Whether that's true or not, I think we do it anyway. We tend to put these values onto these other people, and that has a lot to do because we value them and we respect them.
Mm-hmm.
As contributors and as coders and as people as well.
Right, but how many times you've been programming with or you know working with somebody and you realize actually you know more than them even
yeah.
though they're
absolutely
not, like,
a lot of it's just a conception that we have because we respect them.
Mm-hmm.
The other people in the society, we tend to go, oh yeah, I'm not half as smart as that person, until you've been there for a while and you've started to work with them and you start to realize, hey, actually, you know, I'm not too shabby. I think a lot of that is just a perception that we have.
I organised a couple of little events in Melbourne, which I just called GGD Afternoon Hack. So it was just an idea for women to just basically make a time to sit around and just work on whatever together.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really felt that in my life, I wanted to, you know, devote my own time, my free time, to working on something, some programming task, but I was always being crowded out by, you know, blogs or emails or something else that I felt like I had to respond to. So by kind of making an appointment, I was able to devote time to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, do that with other women. But I'm interested if you have any ideas about how to actually reach women who don't identify as geeky and therefore, you know, aren't on the usual mailing lists and are kind of, you know, they're just on the cusp of it and they could be in there if they knew and if we knew how to reach them.
Yeah, well, I guess my experience with that has mostly been with writers. So because I'm dealing with bloggers, I'm dealing with people who really love to write and who are using the net as a tool to get their writing out there. So they have something they automatically care about and they have some reason to want to use the tool. And then they get locked in and then they're suddenly making their living off their blog and they're like, oh my God, I need to know, you know, how to run. It's like needing to know where your carburetor is in your car. You just need to know something about what's under the hood. So maybe that's a pathway. Maybe some interest, some reason that people have to be on the web. I don't know. Librarians are good. Librarians, you know, want to know how to use the internet. I'm not sure, but I mean, we could brainstorm it. Yeah.
So I'm obviously not female, but. I believe attitudes are changing, and certainly in a team that I run, is a relatively small team, the female input to our team is so important. It brings a lot of balance. Certainly the males want to go head first and get things done and sorted, and the female input into our team is extremely important to bring the balance and slow things down. There's certainly a lot more level-headed females in my team than the level-headed males. So, yeah, female input for our organisation is an extremely important aspect. And
glad you think so. Right on.
Okay, we have to stop now.
Wait, Angela.
This talk was really fascinating because you're trying to solve exactly the same problem that I'm trying to solve, except like earlier in the process. Like you're trying to solve the problem where like women don't think they know about technology, even though they do, and trying to build confidence and stuff like that. And I'm trying to solve the now come help with everything, you know. But it's interesting because a couple of points you brought up, like doing IM and Pastebin and you know having private get-togethers and houses and not really digging your feet into the community until you feel confident is like the exact opposite of what I would recommend, because mm-hmm. to me it's like if you don't have those repeated touch points with the community, mm-hmm. they don't know who the hell you are when you come in, and you know, like that kind of thing. If they've seen you sort of build up your skills over time, you mm-hmm. they, you know. So I don't know, I don't really have a question, it's just like a, it's like you blew my mind. No, I just
that's
like
a concern. No, that yeah. seems like a huge concern, because then it's suddenly like you're coming out of left field and reporting bugs. I don't know.
Yes, I just want to make sure, like, the framework that you're describing is excellent. And I just want to make sure that we, you know, if we all come out of this and go into our local communities and do that, I want to make sure there's a pathway to get them to the next level as well and not work in isolation of the community, because that's actually going to harm them in the long run, mm-hmm. trying to use WordPress or Drupal or these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for listening, and I come up and talk to me about it if you liked it. That was fun.